So something that I don't freely admit to everybody is that I am, for the first time, getting through the Harry Potter series. All of them.
Oh my gosh.
I'm currently halfway through the fourth book. I don't like reading. We've talked about this.
This is actually a point of pain in our relationship.
I have two books from you.
Yes.
On my coffee table. Haven't touched them.
I know you haven't.
Yeah.
I've committed you several times.
You
will not.
I don't know what it is. But when you do an audio book, because I'm huge into podcasts, that's essentially what an audio book is. It's just this big, long narrative thing.
Yeah.
I am loving it. Turns out Harry Potter is pretty good.
It's a good podcast.
It's a really long podcast. I mean, the fourth book alone is like 20 hours of content.
Gosh.
But anyway, yeah, I'm using Audible and, I'm very much enjoying it. So, I wanted to tell our listeners that we actually have a banner on our website where you can go and if you go specifically through our website and go to Audible and sign up for Audible, then you can get 30 days free. A lot of places you can get 7 days free. You can get a 14-day free trial, but through us, you can get a 30-day free trial of Audible, because then you can try it. You can listen to all 20 hours of the fourth Harry Potter book, and if you don't like it, then you can leave. There's no contract or anything.
So 30 days seems like a lot. Seems like a lot of time to get for free.
Yeah.
Is it because all of the executives at Audible are fans of this podcast?
Every single one of them.
I figured that.
Yeah.
I suspected that. This is proof.
I got a phone call and it was like, hey, we love your podcast. And I'm like, who's we? And it was like, the entire advisory board at Amazon. I was like, that makes sense. I understand.
Amazon?
Amazon owns Audible. You didn't know that?
Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, we jumped all the way to Amazon.
All the time that he's spending on Blue Origin and his penis rocket, he is listening to Nerd Critic.
Turns out he loves Nerd Critic.
He loves Nerd Critic.
And he's like, hey, you know what
we're
going to do?
Every time he takes a Bic to his head, he's listening to Nerd Critic.
He's like, you know what we're going to do for you, CJ? And I'm like, what? And he's like, we're going to give you 30 days free.
30 days free to anybody who listens to Nerd Critic.
The best they can offer. Charlie's Angels is a very different movie. I don't know what it is. It feels like an art piece. You know what I mean?
Yeah, or like some sort of heist movie, you know? Charlie's got an angle on everything. Anyway.
It's not where I went with it. It's great. It's great.
Hello, and welcome to Nerd Critic, a deep dive into big movies from the dual perspective of critical nerdiness. My name is
And I am CJ. Jordan here is our studied and credentialed critic.
CJ is our resident nerd. And today, well, actually, what are you wearing, CJ? It looks like you're wearing a Harley Quinn t-shirt.
I'm wearing a Harley Quinn t-shirt.
Oh, is that what you're wearing?
That's what I'm wearing.
That's good.
Also,
I've admired in the past, recently, I've admired your phone case. Superman phone case. Which
thank you. We did talk about it the other
day. Distressed on the back in this way that looks really intentional and good.
And it's just all natural.
Yeah.
It's a good case. I'm glad that I got it. It doesn't block the front.
That's important.
And I've cracked a screen or two in my days.
Oh.
So. Knock on wood. That was a questionable knock. Because I'm not sure how I feel about
knock
that.
Knock on wood.
Okay. All right. Great.
I got you. Today, we are talking about Charlie's Angels. I mean, sorry. Charlie's Angels.
Which had a heist in it. So, you know.
It did. Remind me, CJ. When we were discussing this weekend.
Yes.
This movie came out alongside Ford v. Ferrari.
Yes.
We chose to do Charlie's Angels.
We did.
Partly, I think mostly because it's a franchise movie.
Yes. It was.
And also it was a movie I was very excited to see.
Yeah. We were both looking forward to it. I'm somewhat ashamed to admit that we didn't know what was going to win the box office.
Well, here's what I wonder. Didn't one of us make a prediction that was wrong? Was it me or was it you?
At one point you said Charlie's Angels was going to win the weekend. That was months ago.
Oh.
And then when we talked about it most recently, I said it was going to win the weekend and you're like, oh, I don't know if it will.
Oh.
So you were wrong and then right.
We were both wrong.
Yeah. So, the justification to cover this movie and not Ford v Ferrari right now versus Ferrari, or is it a Ford. V?
Yeah, I think it's V.
Okay. That's disappointing. Is that there was an assumption that come Oscar season and the whole awards circuit, we're going to probably be talking about this movie.
You think Ford v Ferrari is Oscar bait, so we'll probably be talking about
and,
it.
And my assumption is that that in January there might be some very bad movies coming out.
we'll need to bank up some good movies to talk about from the previous year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
We did it this last year.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely the right move. So I'm happy to be talking about Charlie's Angels today. I think that we've got an interesting conversation ahead of us, is what I think. We haven't talked about this movie, by the way, at all.
Not even a little.
Before right now. This is the first
Haven't looked at your notes.
Oh, no.
You haven't seen mine.
Exactly. It's true. I mean, yours, I'm never able to look at yours, and you're always able to look at mine. It's That's a very balanced relationship.
That's purposeful.
all right. Well, let's talk. So,
okay.
Above the Line, just for some context. So, this is really the main reason I was excited about this movie is because of Elizabeth Banks.
Me too.
Who both wrote, directed, I should say, all wrote, wrote. My gosh.
Easy there. I see where the stumble came.
You know where it came from. She wrote, she directed, she produced, she starred in this movie.
Yes.
So it's you know, it's very much an Elizabeth Banks project. I really like Elizabeth Banks.
As do I.
I think she's really great. I've liked her in pretty much everything that I've seen her in. I think she's fantastic in so many ways. And I also adored Pitch Perfect 2. I thought it was better than Pitch Perfect 1. And I thought it was fantastic example of Elizabeth Banks's talents.
There has been one time,
She directed that movie, by the way.
Yes, she did. And she's in that. There has been one time, I think, that I've seen my wife watch a movie and be in genuine tears of laughter. And it was What to Expect When You're Expecting. And it was Elizabeth Banks that was doing a whole shtick. and she lost it. And since then, I have paid attention to Elizabeth Banks. And nearly everything that she does, I enjoy. It might not be transcendent and groundbreaking, but it's always just good.
It's always really good. So, hence the excitement for this movie. Also, we've got Kristen Stewart, Naomi Scott, and Ella Balinski as the titular heroes, the angels of Charlie.
Which we've crushed over Naomi Scott in the past.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible not to.
Yeah.
It's impossible not to.
Yeah.
From the preview, it looked like Kristen Stewart was going to bring something real special. And I guess we can just start talking about this now.
Okay.
Well, she did.
I completely agree.
Right?
I mean, I try real hard, especially with the whole Robert Pattinson and Batman thing. I try really, really hard not to put her in the Bella bucket.
Oh yeah. At this point, it really is so unfair because
it's been so long.
So many things.
But it's still difficult. It's same with Zac Efron, who I actually really enjoy, and he's really funny, and I like him a lot. But he's still High School Musical in the back of my head. It's hard to like get out of that.
Sure.
And I guarantee a lot of people have that with Kristen Stewart.
Not anymore.
Ignore that.
Yeah.
Because she's great in this movie.
Yeah, she is so good. She is a tornado of things in this movie.
Yeah.
She's doing all. She is in any given scene. She is the most interesting thing to watch. She is.
I agree.
Like absolutely the most fun. The most like the most.
The comedic relief.
The most committed to the character. I mean, she's really doing a lot of things right. Pretty much everything right in this movie. She's doing it all right. So
with the spoiler free part, did you like this movie?
Oh, sure. here's the thing. I did like it. I had a good time. I had a much better time than the whatever percentage it got on Rotten Tomatoes. I think that this movie has a lot of flaws. But I also think it's a really fun movie.
Yeah.
And I, so my really, really high level thing is like, so my, you know this, everyone who listens to this podcast should know this. The most important metric for me of a movie is whether or not I had fun.
Yeah.
If I went to the theater and sat down with a bunch of people watching a movie, did I have a good time? And not, you know, and if I don't have a good time, then I better have had a different kind of experience that seemed worthwhile.
Yeah.
But like the bare minimum is like, have a good time. And like, I would say this movie easily cleared that bar for me.
Got it. I think you liked it a little more than I did. I didn't hate this movie. I don't think I'll ever watch it again.
I'm not much of a rewatcher.
Sure. I mean, I am. I'm counting how many times I've seen Avengers Endgame. Anyway, I think I'm at 7.
Okay.
7 or 8. Yeah. Anyway, this movie was, did I have a good time? The majority of the time I had fun. But there were two times that I was sitting there and I consciously thought to myself, I am bored.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about that later. First of all, we're going to talk about, why were you mostly having a good time? What were the spark notes of why you were having a good time without spoiling anything?
The tone is consistent. Mm-hmm. It's a fun tone. It doesn't take itself too seriously. Like it recognized, hey, we're Charlie's Angels and we're going to, you know, build a world around this idea of Charlie's Angels, and it was a fun world to be in. Also, the characters I really enjoyed for the most part. I will get to the one that fell flat for me later, but I enjoyed the characters. I liked being with the characters, especially Kristen Stewart, who every time she was on the screen, I was having a grand old time.
Yeah.
But it was with some of the other character stuff that it kind of fell flat and I got bored.
Well, I mean, it's not going to spoil anything to tell us who you didn't like.
Okay. I should have her name pulled up. I really enjoyed Kristen Stewart and Naomi Scott.
Ella Balinska?
Is that how you say it?
Yeah, well,
I'm
assuming so.
Sure. Ella Balinska.
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 I don't think maybe it had something to do with her, like as an actor, but I just... It did. I was bored every time. Like the whole I made and broke a promise to this older woman. I didn't care. That was one of the times. That was one of the times when she's like talking and she's like, I quit MI6 because we haven't done a spoiler yet. So I'm going to stop talking. but that there was both of the scenes that I was like, oh man, I'm bored. She was on the screen doing something.
She was not an engaging character. I don't know. Anyway, we'll talk more about that. I think that this movie was not very well written when it came to the plot. Like the way that this movie moved forward in terms of like, you know, what the important narrative beats were, it very rarely felt like grounded or the stakes didn't feel I never cared very deeply about what was happening.
Yeah. Our conversation is trying to move forward, but we keep stopping because of the spoiler. Yeah. So let's just say, should people go see this movie?
And we'll talk more about this, but like, I think, yeah,
I do too.
I think this is a good movie to see. I think there's a lot of things going on in this movie that are really great. And I think that like, you know, this is not the kind of a movie that comes along very often. And my hope is, and it's not going to support this very much, but like, this movie isn't supporting this very much, but like, we need to see more action movies by female directors.
Yeah.
We just need that. We just need that. And so, you know, there are some, and we'll get into it later as far as like unpacking some of the problems and how maybe we, you know, in the future they could be mitigated. But just the very sake of having a female, like a female director on an action franchise movie is really important and good. And I want to see more of it. And so, yeah.
Whether we like it or not, the number that is attached to specifically the opening weekend box office to a movie, has a whole lot of impact
yeah.
on those that are involved and the kind of movie that it is and what gets made in the future. And this movie is better than what its box office was.
It's so better than its box office. I want people it's better to than its it. Rotten Tomatoes score.
I agree. I want people to go see it.
All right, let's spoil it.
All right.
So first of all, before we like really get into all the criticism, I think there are some things to nerd out.
Oh, about. I got a bunch of stuff to nerd out.
All right, go for it.
Okay. Well, the first one on my list was actually Naomi Scott and Kristen Stewart. So yeah. We already kind of did that, but I'm just gonna
specifically
the whole. Okay, so Kristen, this is okay. So this is there was a difference. There was a difference between Ella Balinska mm-hmm. and Kristen Stewart as actors trying to do something with a character.
Yes.
And they're a really, really good example of like, I am. So it seemed that Ella, who plays Jane, by the way, Jane kind of, I am playing what is written.
Yes.
Straightforward.
Yes.
This is what
very,
you wrote.
Very little imagination in
yes.
her performance.
Here it is.
I am a hardened spy. Doing this because what?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's
it. I am doing this because that is my job.
Yeah.
I am very good. I do not experience emotions the way regular humans do.
Yes.
I will always win. I am very strong and very smart.
Yes. And then you have Sabina, who is interesting, I mean, that's the word that's attached to it, where Jane was not. So Kristen Stewart takes this character.
It was Sabina.
Sabina, and takes this character that is on the page as one thing, and then explores with it, gives it attitude, the way she sits, the way she moves, the way she talks, the little mannerisms, the inflection of her voice. It's like all what this actor is doing with this character to bring out what they think the writer was imagining. You know what I mean? It's two different kinds of acting.
It is 100% appropriate that she opened this movie.
Yes.
That at the very first scene we get to see Sabina in you know, across the table from this chauvinist dude who's talking about how women sort of need to, you know, need to be a certain thing. And she is basically undergoing a slow explosion of personality.
Yeah.
Where you get to see her just say things and do things that just reveal that she's bursting at the seams with like passion and ability and all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it literally explodes out of her in slow motion at first and then kind of like speeding up until the very end, you know, she gets pushed off the ledge of the roof.
Yeah.
And then you see her like hanging out of a helicopter, you know, giving a peace sign. And it's like, it's so cool. Yeah. And it's so perfect for who she, like what this character was written as and then how she interpreted it. Like you said, like it was written, she was written to be, you should be interesting. You should be kind of exotic and strange and a little disturbing and a little bit like a mess kind of emotionally or not emotionally, but socially, you know?
Yeah.
And then Kristen Stewart takes that and says, all right, for each of these moments, here's what I think that could mean and bring something truly like authentic and interesting and inventive so that all of the, you know, frames of her in it, like are just, you just can't look away.
I completely agree. And I am going to jump over to Naomi Scott, who I think it was, she does something very similar. It's less engaging because the way the character is written and like how she interacts with the plot, this character that's kind of being dragged along. But she does her best to make decisions. And like I liked the character, and Naomi Scott was just so charming.
Yeah.
And like as the vehicle for the audience to enter into this world was a really smart casting choice because you want to join her. She's really likable. She's not like the nerd that's too nerdy or the nerd that's like you don't believe that she's smart. You know what I mean? Like she just fit this. She found her character, I think.
Two notes about Naomi Scott. One, it's remarkable to me. Well, first of all, just to follow up on what you said, this deeply sympathetic character that she presents on screen. I'm thinking particularly the moment where she has this whole speech about how she wants to be included.
Oh my gosh,
and
she's able. Yeah.
And they're like, Well, yeah. That's why you're here. And she just kind of sits down and is like, yeah, no, it's, yeah, get it. And it's,
carry on.
It's really funny and really perfect. And she delivers it absolutely perfectly. And I think that's a great example. Really from the beginning, there's so many perfect examples of how she does this thing perfectly. So, you know, there's doing it like as written, and then there's taking the thing that's written and executing perfectly, like so that you know, okay, what's the objective of this character? This character is basically the straight man to get the audience into the story.
Yeah.
This character is the vehicle through which the audience will understand what's going on. All the exposition comes at me. Like, you understand, she understands. What's the most important thing for this character? This character needs to be sympathetic and needs to be real and feel like, oh, if I was there, maybe I would do the same thing. And so to be able to understand what the emotional requirement for that character is and then deliver it perfectly.
Yeah.
And that's totally what she did. That's my first note. My second note is that it's remarkable, and this is one of the reasons we need more female directors. It's remarkable that you can take someone as beautiful as Naomi Scott and make her seem just normal.
Yeah.
Like, just 100% normal. Yeah. Like, she was not in any way... I mean, if anybody... So, Kristen Stewart was, like, exotic and, like...
Mysterious
and feral.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's sexy in very many ways.
Yeah.
And then you've got Jane's character, who is...
A model.
Literally just a model.
Yeah.
And her character sort of plays into that sort of like statuesque and like inaccessible, you know, inaccessible sort of beauty. And then, you know, but the reality is that Naomi Scott is more beautiful than both of them.
Yeah.
She is, but she doesn't come across that way. She's directed in a way, and she's filmed in a way, and she's performing in a way that makes her just seem like an every woman, which is amazing. And really great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, for the most part, the casting across the board is really good.
Yes.
Like, Elizabeth Banks' character was great. The Saint.
Oh my gosh.
Was he perfect. He was so good. The Bosley. Have we said spoilers?
We said spoilers.
Okay, great. Yes. The Bosley that dies.
Yes.
Also great.
Yes.
I mean, and then the handsome nerd, as minor of a character as that was, I would have loved to see more of him, but as minor as it was, fantastic.
Character cast amazingly, executed amazingly.
Yeah, it was great.
I mean, really,
great.
You love him so fast. He's so great.
Do you think it was on purpose that, like, the assassin, the muscle, did he kind of look like Crispin Glover to you? Who was the bad guy in the first Cameron Diaz, Lucy Liu, Drew Barrymore, Charlie's Angels? You haven't seen those.
I never saw those.
It's fine.
Well, yeah.
It's fine. I actually really enjoyed them. I was at that age, though.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
It didn't seem important to me. I'm like, if I haven't seen it by now, I don't know if I'm going to go back and make a point of seeing them.
It's definitely not important. Anyway.
Patrick Stewart,
yes. Who, if you're going to try and do this little twisty twist.
If you want Patrick Stewart to be a villain, I guess that's the way to do it.
I mean, if you're going to cast somebody that you're going to try and hope that people never know that he's the bad guy, you know, Professor Xavier is probably a pretty good choice.
Yeah.
Kirk himself. Not Captain Kirk. Captain...
Picard.
I regret... What?
Picard.
Yes, thank you. Yes. You saved me.
Yeah.
You did. I appreciate
that. You're
welcome.
Because I'm part French.
Okay.
It's not true at all. great casting. Cross the board. Very happy. Very happy with the casting. And one of the... Honestly, like, if I'm... You know, it's impossible to say exactly how much influence Elizabeth Banks had over the casting, but it could not have been small. She's the director.
Yeah.
She was the engine behind this movie getting made. One of the hallmarks of a good director is good casting, and boy, did she nail it.
Yeah, she did. I know you said that the plot wasn't incredibly inventive, but I do want to bring up one thing that we've talked about in the past that we've talked about is a fault of movies in the past that this movie did not do. And that is the universal threat of a nuke or some kind of bomb or some kind of virus or some kind of USB that we don't know what it does, but it probably contains bank numbers to whatever. There's all, like, we've talked about how that's an issue,
yeah.
right? And I was afraid that they were going to do that when she first meets with Bosley and is like, here's my USB. And I was like, "Are you, here we go." But for better or worse, whatever, you know, this little kind of Rubik's Cube looking thing did for the audience, I appreciated the extra thought that was put into what would be like a really cool 2019 threat.
It didn't land quite right for me.
But I appreciate that it wasn't just a nuke in a suitcase.
Yes.
Which they actually made a joke about that, like, yes. men love their dangerous stuff in suitcases.
Yeah, like,
so anyway, I just wanted to highlight that didn't fly by me.
Yes.
Because we've talked about it in the past, so I appreciated what it was trying to do.
Yeah. And that's, to kind of, I think, bridge a little bit into some of the more critical territory, I guess. If you're going to, like, point at the main problem with this movie was the writing.
Yeah.
I think that, like, we can kind of poo-poo the action sequences and how they were directed. And it's actually hard to say how much. So in modern action movies, a lot of the time you'll have a director that is sort of the director of the movie. Like Elizabeth Banks is the director of this movie, but then you end up having like second unit directors for the action sequences.
Yeah.
So it's actually tough to say how much influence she did or didn't have over the action sequences. I will say that it's not a good look. The action sequences are not that well constructed.
Agreed.
It's hard to stay oriented. They don't quite get there a lot of the time, which is unfortunate because I think there was a lot of potential for it. But anyway, but the writing was kind of an issue, and it, primarily in the plot, which when you have a problem with the plot, what you end up with is characters who don't get developed as well as you'd like because they don't have a plot to develop them. You know, this kind of goes hand in hand. We have really awesome characters as presented in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then at the end, they're kind of the same as they were
exactly
in the beginning.
Exactly the same. Yeah. Exactly the same.
And that's because they didn't have the vehicle of plot to ride to a different state of character.
They tried. The effort was there in the bomb going off and the very sudden caring from Jane to Sabina. She crying.
The crying was weird.
It was weird.
A really weird moment.
But I think it was their way of trying to, like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so yeah.
There's some change. Yeah. They're growing closer together as a team. Yes, I definitely felt that. The two different plot twists that were fairly ineffective for me.
Yeah, it was very clunky.
There was no shock and awe. It did everything that it was supposed to do, which is not a good thing. It did everything that it was supposed to do in the way that like the angels were sexy and independent.
Mm.
They were never like slutty or fighting in high heels. And, you know, like they wore high heels, but they would take them off to run. You know what I mean? It was a movie that was directed by a woman and you could tell, in those little details, all of them had both masculine and feminine qualities. You had one of them that was gay. There were three different ethnicities. It did all of the politically correct things. And that's fine. It did nothing beyond that.
Yeah.
And the plot was the exact same way. The plot was, we need a global threat. We need one twist. Hey, let's make it even better. Let's do two twists. And it just hit all of the check marks. And so the entire time you're going through it, you're like, yep, that makes sense.
Yep.
Yep, that makes sense.
Deeply predictable movie. And when it was not predictable, it was unearned. So the moment I'm thinking of most clearly is when they're at the warehouse, which is a sequence I actually really liked for the most part.
Yeah, me too.
As far as like action set pieces go, I think it was one of the better handled sequences in the movie. But when they're in that moment when Bosley, Elizabeth Banks's character, leaves without a word, and you're meant to believe at that point that she's the villain.
Yeah.
It's so ham-handed, you know?
Yeah.
That you're like, well, okay, obviously she's the villain. But, like, why wouldn't she, if she wasn't a villain, why wouldn't she say something?
Yeah.
You know, there's literally no reason for her not to say something. Mm-hmm. None. Other than that we want the audience to believe and the characters to believe that she's bad.
Yeah.
So it's like spoon feeding us this red herring and then, like, more, like the, you know, him, Patrick Stewart's Bosley being, you know, finding the bug on him and being like, oh, I know who, you know, whatever. It's all very, like, pointedly built, set up to, like, show this thing. So it's like, well, either this movie is very, very dumb, or it's, like, a little less dumb and trying to mislead me, which is probably true because it doesn't seem very likely. Okay, sorry. One last, the more important rant here, and I'm not going to rant, I'm just going to point it out, is that I really, really want Elizabeth Banks' character to be bad. Because, like, it's not less empowering of a female movie to have the villain be female. It's not! It's okay to have a female villain in a female-led movie.
The first Cameron Diaz, Charlie's Angels movie, spoiler, I guess, the villain is Demi Moore.
Okay, so there you go. And so maybe that, and that, there's some baggage there, right? Because then if you decide to make the Bosley of this,
then they needed a man to save them.
Yeah, you've rinse and repeated, and the man saves them, or whatever.
This was a conversation I had with my wife leaving the theater. Was that I felt kind of conflicted because it felt actually kind of nice. It wasn't ham-handed in the fact that it was a kind of a man-hating movie, which it had the opportunity to be. Mm. And I was like thinking back, and I was like, well, yes. All the bad guys and all the henchmen were indeed men. Mm-hmm. Anybody that they were fighting were men. So there's that.
But good men too.
There was a good man that we focused on, and then he dies, and then, you know what I mean.
And then there was the saint, and then there was the
nerd. That's true. There were good men. So I was like kind of behind it, and then the ending happened. And it was just kind of laid on. It was a real thick layer at the very end. Oh, and I was like, ooh, I didn't like that. So when we left, my wife and I were talking about that. And I was expressing how I didn't like that thick layer of all the men dropping to the ground and all the women are there. And obviously I'm a man, right? Sure. So it's not supposed to really appeal to me.
Okay, hang on.
But hold on. So I'm having that conversation. And my wife says, well, for me, as a woman, it felt like it was a moment where the women were taking back the franchise. This idea that Charlie was always a dude, Bosley was always a dude. And since the beginning of Charlie's Angels, there have been men in control. And this was the moment that Elizabeth Banks was saying, no, we don't need men to be in control. Charlie's a woman, Bosley's a woman, and this is an agency of women. So they're taking control. And that then landed with me a little bit better. I was like, oh, I appreciate that perspective. I understand that. It was still a little thick for me, but if it landed with her as well as it did, then I think it was effective.
Sure, maybe it was. I don't like things that are ham-handed because they feel naturally less effective. Like, if you are less obvious, or if you're more... it's not even necessarily about being obvious or subtle. It's about just
like Black Panther feeling truthful. Was not subtle.
No, it was not subtle, but it was so effective.
Yeah.
And part of the reason, so, you know, let's apply some of Black Panther's wisdom to a potential rewrite of Charlie's Angels. And here's what I would suggest. And this isn't in any detail. So, you know, who knows how hard this would be to execute, but I don't think it would be that challenging. Let's say you have Elizabeth Banks. Let's let her be the villain. And let's let her villainy be that she has been the victim of sexism for a long time. Mm. She's been in this organization for a long time.
Sure.
And as nice and wonderful as Patrick Stewart is, and Patrick Stewart's Bosley is, and has honored as he is, and all that, you know, like the retirement thing and whatever, he's also a bit of a sexist pig, right?
Sure.
Like, in the way that, like, you know, your really well-meaning grandpa was, you know? Like, he's a good guy. He's a hard worker. He's a good whatever. But he also always calls his secretary honey and, you know,
sure.
And she's never going to get a promotion. You know, like that?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so if we let her sort of be the victim of that sort of like casual sexism for so long in this organization, and then all, and then and have this sort of vision of like a female-led Charlie's Angels, or Townsend agency or whatever, but take it too far. Like, let's let her be a like a warmonger, right? Like, or what is it? Is that I get his name right? Warmonger? No.
What are we talking about? On Black Panther?
Yeah. Come on.
I know.
Dude.
I know.
You're supposed to be with me here.
I know.
That's why you're on this show. I can't do that.
Warmonger's great.
It's not, though, is it?
It's not.
It's not.
Continue talking. I'll look it
up.
Oh,
my gosh.
I know.
I feel bad about myself and about you. Anyway, Killmonger.
Yeah, it is. You got it.
Thank you. I got it by myself.
It was a test. I actually knew the whole time.
Oh, you jerk. You lying jerk. He not only lies, Killmonger. He lies yeah. to make me feel bad about myself. Anyway, okay. Killmonger. So let's let her pull a Killmonger. She's got a good point. She's morally justified on some
level.
She's not wrong.
Yeah.
But then her solution is we need to kill these men. Mm-hmm. We need to get rid of them entirely. So that we can pave the way for our own, you know, agenda. And then let's let one of the angels be the counterpoint. So it's not a man coming in and saving them, but rather another female saying, hey, there's a better way.
Yeah.
There's a better way to deal with this problem. And like we can work together. We can still be totally self-actualized. And actually we can be way better off if we learn how to work with these people and basically force and negotiate a better situation in this, you know, whatever, like a better dynamic, like take power for that reason, not in order to kill.
Two wrongs don't make a right.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And like that would be so much more of a compelling story.
Yeah.
And also you could give one of the angels like a really amazing hero's journey. Like how do you get from, you know, trusting and idolizing this person. It's the same story, right?
Like, I mean, it could be Naomi Scott's same character who was a victim of that casual sexism.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of interesting potential in there. It just didn't feel, I guess here's the word I'm looking for. Sophistication.
Mm.
I think something that is sophisticated is so much more effective and emotionally resonant than something that is not sophisticated at all.
Yeah.
Usually.
Yeah. So I do agree with you that at the micro level, writing was the problem. I naturally look at the macro level and kind of look at specifically walking out of this movie and thinking to myself, yeah, like that was good. That was fine. Like that was a movie. That was passable. And then realizing, man, I've said that a lot this year.
What?
That like I've walked out of a passable theater and saying like, "Ooh, yeah. Here's a list, okay?"
Oh, I'm
of
excited.
Movies that we have covered that we have said in one form or another that these are passable movies. Where some of these we were more harsh against, some of them we were more favorable towards. I think that had to do with expectations, but I think we would both agree that this list are for movies that weren't excellent but weren't terrible. Terminator Dark Fate, Black and Blue, Zombieland Double Tap, Gemini Man, Abominable, Ad Astra, It Chapter 2, Angel Has Fallen, The Kitchen, Hobbs and Shaw, Lion King, Stuber, Godzilla, Missing Link, Hellboy.
This year.
This year only.
Yeah.
Yeah. So these, and these are just movies that we've covered.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other movies that would probably fall into that category.
That we've seen. And yeah. That, yeah.
So I saw
Harriet over the weekend as well. And I would love to do an episode about that. Because same thing. You're so, like, there's really good stuff here. I'm really glad, blah, blah, blah. But like, yeah.
And so I'm trying to like think about, because Elizabeth Banks is great. She's funny. This movie, Charlie's Angels, wasn't as funny as I thought it would be, especially being directed by Elizabeth Banks.
Who's really good at comedy.
Who's really good at comedy. And so I am like trying to figure it out. And I'm like looking at the industry as a whole. And there's the automatic go-to of studios are too involved, right? Everyone, like, that's usually the conversation of like, if a movie has specific moments that feel like outliers or specific qualities that feel like outliers from the good story that's underneath. Usually it's the studio hand coming in and saying, you need this, this, and this to make this a blockbuster, right? So that's where people automatically go. But looking past that, one, it's hard to make good movies. Mm-hmm. It's very, very difficult. Two, they are naturally like risk averse, right? Because mm-hmm. you'd want to make your money back. But the biggest one, in my opinion, and this might be a little bit of a hot take, I might offend some people with this, but here we go. I think that one of the things that is making movies just kind of middle of the ground is the fear that studios have, that anybody has because of their career, to offend people. Mm. Like there, because then you never take risks. You never really explore a story in the ways that like take a character and make that character bad. Like in this movie, let's make a woman evil. Let's explore what it's like. It just feels like that there were potentially things that you could have done specifically in this movie and a bunch of others, but we're talking about Charlie's Angels. There are things that you could have done that maybe aren't quote unquote politically correct that would have made the story more interesting, more compelling, and maybe have like taught something else. But because there are these specific outlines that you need to fall into, and you don't want to get roasted on Twitter, and you don't want to create a scandal, that it becomes kind of this generic, bland thing. And I think it's a problem.
I think that you're right. Absolutely, you're right. There's true and there's correct. And true and correct don't always match. And correct is more about not offending people. And true is about finding is about connecting with people. So if you want to not offend anybody, you might sacrifice connecting with anybody. Is that my making sense?
Yeah, no, that made sense.
I think that, like, but it's tough too to point the finger of blame because, like, you know, the development process at a studio is weird and hard to predict. Like, it's hard, it's kind of a black box for people outside of it. Like, you don't. I mean, even people who are making movies and part of different studio systems, like, you don't really get to look into another studio system. It's like,
yeah,
the development process of any movie is a little bit of a black box until people who are actually in the process talk about it. And even then, you get a bunch of different perspectives about the same thing. And so there can be it's really tough to say who's at fault here. But you're right. You're right that there's a lot of mediocrity. And I do believe that one of the culprits is fear or risk aversion, the unwillingness to try to say something true at the expense of potentially being correct.
Yeah, and because I think about some of the more critical examples, like movies like Moonlight mm-hmm. or Roma mm-hmm. or, and these are obviously the critical the awards movies, but generally those are the ones that take a little more risk. But it's like, you know, Moonlight is about a homosexual African-American man in the ghetto.
Yeah.
Like it is kind of naturally offensive to like all of the Midwest of America. Like it's like there are so many topics within that one line pitch that are not politically correct to talk about. But there are things that need to be talked about, and there it's a story that needs to be explored, because I don't think that you will find very human stories if you're not willing to talk about what it's like to be human.
That's a really great way of putting it. I also want to point out that storytelling is really hard.
Which is why I led with it's really hard to make movies.
So hard. And it's not just, so making movies as producing movies from top to bottom is very, very, very hard. So
the logistics of it.
logistically, you know, human and economically resource wise, it is incredibly challenging and expensive and terrifying on every level to make a movie. But before you do that, it is equally hard in an inward psychological way to produce a good script.
If not more so.
If not harder.
Yeah.
And I think actually, demonstrably, it's harder.
Yeah.
Because there aren't that many profoundly good scripts in the world. There just aren't. It's very, very hard. Plenty of people have said that screenwriting is the hardest thing to do in the world. I've tried screenwriting. I agree. I consider myself a reasonably intelligent and talented person. I find writing screenplays to be crushingly difficult to the point that I mostly don't try. I don't even like to try.
I think I've gotten
through hard.
I think I've gotten through half a page and decided, yeah, it's not for me.
It's very, very hard. And it, you know, it's hard enough just to write anything and to write a good thing and then to write a good screenplay, which is unforgiving. You can't get away with anything in a screenplay. You can't paper over anything. Weakness will show in a screenplay. Yeah. It just will. You can pretend that parts of a novel aren't weak. For heaven's sakes, Harry Potter is like the most popular book franchise in the whole world, and it is riddled with weaknesses. Mm. But people do not care because it's papered over left and right with lots of tricks that novelists can use.
Yeah.
In a screenplay, you don't get anything. It's all there. It's all naked. You don't get to talk your way out of it. It's right there.
Yeah.
And you're Quentin Tarantino. Sorry.
I don't want to throw shade at Elizabeth Banks or any of the people.
Think she deserves it.
No, definitely
also,
not.
Also,
definitely not.
Let's take it. On your list was Stuber, which I was actually thinking about the movie earlier in our conversation about movies that were not that great, but were fun and did some things well. And that Stuber was a very dude movie that got a reasonably high score on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
And Charlie's Angels was very much a chick movie that got a very low score on Rotten Tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And I think qualitatively they were about the same.
Oh, yeah.
So I think there maybe is a little bit of sexism.
Oh, totally. Yeah, no question. It's also like, yeah, I do think the whole Bella thing. Like, I think that there are a plethora of people who are not going to go see Charlie's Angels. Because
of Kristen Stewart?
Because of Kristen Stewart.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I work with probably five of them. Like,
really?
because it's Bella.
Like, no, I don't
and
like
it's it. Well, it's because like you and I saw that in the trailer, they were pushing Kristen Stewart as the most interesting part of this movie. And so if you don't believe that she could possibly be interesting,
then you're
not going to go see this movie.
Yeah.
But I don't want to throw shade because this movie did a lot of things right. And I have no idea. I have no production stories. I have no insight whatsoever as to why this movie ended up being exactly what it was. And exactly what it is not bad, but it felt like there could have been much more. Mm-hmm. That a platform of a female director, female producer, did she write this?
Yeah,
female writer. Like the platform to be able to like take this historically female-centric franchise and bring it to 2019 and twist some things around and to be able to say some things that are relevant to 2019.
You could have done some real bold things with this movie. I think it would have helped it a lot.
Part of me thinks maybe Elizabeth Banks was, I have no idea, but maybe she wasn't given the freedom to be able to push those limits. I don't know.
Yeah. It's impossible to say,
but it's
in the black box.
But what I do know is that the equation of the way the world works right now very rarely equals pushing the limits. And I think that this movie fell victim to that equation.
Speaking of which, we did an episode on Joker.
We did.
Which was not a perfect film.
No.
But certainly pushed some limits.
To the point, yeah. I mean, it pissed a lot of people off. It pissed me off.
To the point that like the studio, I believe, as I've heard, was terrified of releasing it. Was terrified.
Yeah.
Like they didn't want to make it. They gave it as low of a budget as possible, hoping that they just wouldn't make it.
I've seen that headline all over the place.
And so it goes and makes $1 billion.
Yeah.
Push the limits.
Yeah.
We're at the theater.
Yeah.
We're here. We paid our money. We're sitting in the seat. Show us something.
Yeah.
Please, for the love of mercy, show us something.
Yeah.
And I don't know who I'm yelling at.
Neither do I.
Nobody knows.
Yeah.
I think that...
And nobody, like, whoever it is, no one thinks that they're the one being yelled at. Like, because there's not one person.
No, I think this goes to executives at studios, like, top-level executives who decide how development processes get constructed. Those processes need to be improved. They need to invite better writers, better creative direction, and more open. Open-ended environments.
Yeah, yeah.
Open-ended, but directed. Because good development, and we've talked about this before a number of times in the past few weeks or months on this show, that a good storytelling culture relies on a good process of development where creatives aren't just left to their own devices, but they are empowered to be the best that they can be and to produce the best work that they can. And that doesn't include being afraid of Twitter fire, right? Yeah, it includes really good notes from really insightful people that help to bring out whatever that thing needs to be, the best that that thing can be. And I don't think that that happens nearly as much as it... I mean, obviously it doesn't. Otherwise, we'd see the evidence of it.
Yeah, not in large studios. Like, the mentality you're talking about feels like an indie mentality.
But it's not. But here's the terrible thing. It wasn't. It wasn't.
Yeah.
Until the past decade or so. It wasn't. It was much more part of the studio system to shepherd this stuff and make sure that it, like, was developed. And people cared more than they do now. And now I just don't think it's part of the equation. It's certainly not part of the equation in the same way it was. Yeah. It's about checking boxes.
Yeah.
And people think that if they check the right sequence of boxes, that they can get that $1 billion in the box office. And that's not the way it works.
I mean, I'm as big of a Marvel fan as anybody, even though I couldn't remember Killmonger. It's fine. It's fine. I mean, but
you mean you were testing me?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I meant. That's what I said. But they're kind of a hard exception because there are certain boxes that they're checking. Yeah. They're different boxes.
But
they are checking boxes.
Out of the 21, 2, whatever movies that are in that Marvel Cinematic Universe so far, over half of them are just okay.
That's true.
We're not talking about
just like pumping out
pitch hitters.
Gems.
Like we're talking about like...
Yeah, that's true. But they still make a ton of money.
They do. Well, they make a ton of money because they're checking the right sequence of boxes.
Yeah. I mean, I go see them because those boxes are checked. It's a weird kind of surface.
It's
landscape.
Yes, it is. But like, you know, once again, it's about being true. And I would say, even though I would say that many of the Marvel movies are mediocre, many of them are also true. Many of them feel true in a way that is important. And yes, there's weaknesses, but also audiences wouldn't show up 20 movies in a row unless you were hitting it sometimes.
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, the money that they're making isn't because they're always checking the right boxes. It's because the only box that really matters is that it feels true often enough that you are willing to take another shot again and again. And so that's the power of Marvel, is that it's built a franchise that people trust that there's a good chance that the true box is going to get checked. Mm. Anyway.
That's good.
I
think we stumbled on an intriguing conversation.
I hope so. Do you think there's going to be another Charlie's Angels movie?
Not with the amount of money this made.
No.
I wish that there would be. I wish that they...
I think this franchise might be a little bit played out too. I'd like to see...
It may be played out, but I think the potential is there.
Yeah.
I think the world that you could build around it could be really cool.
Could be. But they'll give it another shot. It's unlikely, but maybe. We'll see. Maybe there'll be a TV show. I don't know. You know, a rebooted TV show somewhere.
Sure.
Here's all I want to say. I want Elizabeth Banks to just keep hustling.
I do too.
Just keep hustling and make the next thing. I don't care what it is. Just make something else. I love it. I want her to keep working.
I agree.
Anyway.
She's also just really charming anytime you see her on like any talk show or anything. she's just great. Yeah. She's great.
Yeah.
I've made my peace. So.
All right. Well, let's move on to what's coming up next week. On Monday, we're going to be talking about Rian Johnson.
Indeed.
Apropos of what we've been talking about, because this man is quite a writer and director.
Indeed.
And I'm excited to talk about him. And he's got a new movie coming out the following Friday.
Called Knives Out.
Yes.
And I am so excited for that movie.
Yes, I am too.
And I can guarantee right now, that sometimes in movies we're like, hey, this is like a half a spoiler. Guaranteed, this will be a heavy spoiler. So go see Knives Out.
Oh, yeah.
So that we can talk about it.
Oh, yeah, we're going to spoil the bonkers out of it. Okay. Yeah. Okay, that's... I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
Thank you, Michael Baumiller, for the wonderful music. As always, sir, we are filled with gratitude.
And everyone else, except for Michael Baumiller, remember to love movies like a nerd and respect them like a critic.
And cut.